Krishna has explained the principle that one should think of Krishna and still do one's duty, but one should think of Krishna because of the rule yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajant yante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kanteya saratad bhava bhava. One should think of Krishna because one will go to that place upon which his consciousness is fixed at the time of his death. This is the rule, sada. What does sada mean? Always. Sada tad bhava. This is always, this rule always works, whether you are thinking of Krishna or your pet fish. Whatever you are thinking of at the time of death, you will go to that place. So therefore, in text 7, Krishna says, you should always think of me, and with your activities dedicated to me, and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, then you will attain me without any doubt, because this is the rule. Now, to emphasize this point, that one should think of Krishna, Krishna speaks, text 8. We didn't do text 8 yesterday, right? No. Okay. Abhyasya yoga yuktena chetasananya gamina paramam purusham divyam yati paratanunu chintayan. He who meditates upon me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Partha, is sure to reach me. Krishna is emphasizing this point, that one should fix his mind on the paramam purusham divyam, the supreme transcendental person, paramam purusham divyam. Divyam means transcendental. Purusha means person, and Paramam means the Supreme. This is the correct place to fix one's mind as one is doing mam anusmara yudhyacha. When one is doing one's duty, one should think about Krishna undeviatingly, ananya gamina, without being deviated. One should, practically speaking, only think of Krishna. This is actually the purpose of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, to always think of Krishna and never forget him. And this is the purpose of all rules and regulations. Smartavyo satatam Vishnu vismartavyo nujatachit. I quote that verse so many times, that to always remember Krishna and never forget him. This is the actual sava vidhi nishedha cha, all the rules and regulations. That means the rules means what you should do, the vidhi. You should chant on beads, you should go see the deity, and all you shouldn't do. You should not break any of the four rules. You should not wear your shoes in the temple. All the vidhi and nishedha. Nishedha means the prohibitions, the regulations, what you shouldn't do. Vidhi means what you should do. So all that you should do and shouldn't do that's prescribed in the Shastra is meant to bring one to the position of always remembering Krishna and never forgetting him. Eight of your eva kinkara. All these rules and regulations are just kinkara. What is kinkara?
Servants
of this one rule and regulation, to always remember Krishna and never forget him. Their purpose is to fix us in Krishna consciousness. This is the essence. So someone who is undeviatingly remembering Krishna is sure to reach Krishna. He meditates on Krishna. One should meditate, but on what? Paramam purusham divyam. What does that mean? Dinesh. Paramam, Purusham.
This is the universality is translated.
Yeah, Dibhyam. So one should meditate undeviatingly on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the results, because of the rule of Yam Yam Vapi Smaram Bhavam, that whatever you think of at the time of death, you will attain that, to that. Therefore, such a person who is undeviatingly meditating on Krishna is sure to reach Krishna. So now, in the next few verses, it describes how to think about Krishna, how to meditate on Him, and in the next verses it will continue how to do this meditation in yoga, misra, bhakti. Krishna has already explained in the 7th chapter jnana misra bhakti and karma misra bhakti, and now he's going to explain yoga misra bhakti, how devotional service or bhakti mixed with yoga. So one should meditate upon the Supreme Person. So this is how to always think of Krishna. As the one who knows everything. He is Kavi. This is the first one. Kavim. He is Kavi. Kavim Puranam. He is the oldest person who knows everything. He knows everything in the past. He knows everything in the present. He knows everything in the future. So one should meditate on the Supreme Person as the one who knows everything, past, present, and future. As He who is the oldest, He is Puranam. That means that He is the oldest of individuals. He is the most experienced of individuals. But that does not mean that He is old, with wrinkled skin and a big old white beard. And he's not like that, because although Krishna is the oldest, his body doesn't grow old. He is the oldest, but his body never grows past the age of 16. He is always nava jovanam cha. He is always a freshly blooming youth of 16 years old. No beard, no mustache, no wrinkled skin, no hair falling out. No fatigue, no hard of hearing, no liver having a tough time digesting, no stomach problems, no creaking joints. When Krishna stands up, we don't hear his joints, his knees crunching and crackling. No, he never gets old, although he is the oldest person, because he is Dibyam, he is transcendental. He is completely transcendental, although he is the oldest. And anusastaram, sastaram means that he is the controller. He is the controller who is situated in everyone's heart. Sarvasya chaham riddhi sanavisto mata smritim jnanam apohanam cha. He controls everything. Ishvara savabhutanam riddhishe Arjuna Tishtati. He controls what body we take. He controls what karma we get. He controls our remembering, our forgetfulness, our knowledge. He is the supreme controller, and we should think of him like that. We should not think that we are the controller. We should think of Krishna as the controller. He knows everything. We should rely on him because he knows everything. He is the supreme controller, who is smaller than the smallest. And the word is ano ayanangsam. He is smaller than the atom, or the smallest. He is smaller than the soul. He is greater than the greatest and smaller than the smallest. Although the soul is 1/10,000th, the tip of a hair in size, and we can't even imagine, because I can't take out any of mine very easily today. But if we took a hair, just imagine cutting the tip of that hair. Say if the hair was lengthwise like this. If we cut the tip 100 in 100 portions. Practically, we can't even cut the tip in half. But if we cut the tip in 100 equal portions, so we can't even imagine how small that would be. It would be so small. And then, Nanda, come here for a sec. Can you hold it? This is 100. Nanda.
Oh no.
And pick it up and then cut it in 100 again. So it is so, it is inconceivably small. It is smaller than the smallest. And not only that, it is subtle. It is not gross matter. So even if we had some type of an amazing electronic microscope that could see a particle 1/10,000th the head of a hair in size, it could not see the soul, because the soul is not matter, it is subtle, and one needs spiritual vision to see the soul. We see the soul by the symptom of the soul. Prabhupada explains this in Life Comes From Life. He explains, if I give you a tiny, 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 untraceable amount of poison and I put it in your body, and you start to die, you will not say, I can't be dying because it's so small, the amount that you gave me. No! But we can tell that the poison, when it's administered, by the actual symptom of its presence, the fact that the person starts dying, even though it's untraceable, by its symptom it can be perceived. So similarly, spirit soul can be perceived, and that spirit soul, although it's 1/10,000th the head of a hair in size, and it's perceived by its consciousness, by shedding consciousness all over the body, still within that soul, which is the smallest, the super soul enters. Within the heart of the soul. Within the heart of the soul, the super soul enters. So therefore he is smaller than the smallest. He is the maintainer of everyone. This will actually be explained further in the 15th chapter. Krishna says, Varta Bhokta Maheshwaram. He is the controller, he is the master, and he is the Bhokta, or the maintainer. And he will explain in the 15th chapter his mercy, that by him the rains come, and the sun comes, and by the sunlight the vegetables grow, and the water comes by his mercy, and the moon nourishes the vegetables. So then we take the vegetables and we cook them, and he is fire that we use for cooking them. So by his grace is the sun, the vegetables grow, by his grace is the moon, the vegetables become tasty, and then by his grace, as fire, they are cooked, and then we eat them, and by the different airs, outgoing and in, they are brought down. And then by his grace, as fire, the fire of digestion, the food is digested. So at every step, it is Krishna who is maintaining us. He's giving the sunlight, the moonlight. He's giving everything that we need, the air that we need. So it is Krishna that is maintaining us. And when one is being maintained by another, he should be very humble and not think that he is very powerful, because he is dependent. So we are dependent upon Krishna, and therefore we should not be envious of Krishna, we should surrender to him. So he is the maintainer of everything, who is beyond all material conceptions. This will be explained further in the next chapter, Krishna's Achintya Shakti, how he is non-different from everything, yet he is separate, different from everything. Krishna has unlimited inconceivable potencies, achintya guna sarupam. His potency has his personal form, which is the next one. He has achintya rupa. He has an inconceivable form, and he is beyond material conception. That when we look at him, we may think so many things about him. We may think that he's a boy, But he is not a boy. He's the oldest. We may think he's beautiful. But we cannot conceive with our material eyes or mind how beautiful Krishna is. In Madhurya Kadambini, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes how he's describing the different stages, and when he gets to the stage of prema, or bhava, I think actually, he describes how every analogy that we compare Krishna to in the material world, we say he is blue or blue-blackish like a fresh monsoon cloud, and his dhoti is the color of lightning. And we have different material analogies. And his legs are like, he walks like an intoxicated elephant, walks very slowly or something. So all these analogies, these material analogies, are completely incomplete. They're incomplete, unsatisfactory. To actually help us understand the beauty and the potency of Krishna. He is more beautiful than the most beautiful. He is more powerful than we can possibly conceive. We can conceive of someone so powerful that he can lift 350 kilos over his head or something like that. Or someone can lift the front part of a car. But can we conceive of someone so powerful that he can lift a mountain with the little finger of his left hand? Or unlimited universes? Inconceivable power. And I'm looking like a small boy. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, now that I'm actually seeing you, all the analogies that I have used to describe you seem so useless. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as he smells the fragrance of Krishna, he faints, first described. And as he sees Krishna's form, each one of his senses as they perceive Krishna, faints. And the sound of Krishna's flute. How? It's inconceivable. Can you conceive of a sound that is so sweet and so beautiful like Krishna's flute, that when the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis of Vrindavan hear it, that no matter what they are doing, if they're cooking, stirring the milk pot, or if they're feeding the babies of others, or if they're sleeping, or if they're talking to someone, as soon as the sound of that flute enters their ears, they become stunned. And they stop what they're doing, and immediately, as if nothing else in the whole world exists, they go running to see that boy who is blowing the flute. When they get there, Krishna said, "Why are you here?" And they say, "When we heard the sound of the flute, our minds immediately went, and now we've come to take back our minds, to take our possessions back, because the flute sound has stolen our minds." How inconceivably beautiful. As soon as you hear it, your mind is finished, and the rest of the world practically ceases to exist. And the fragrance of Krishna is so amazingly delightful that when the breeze carrying the fragrance of Krishna's garland mixed with his transcendental body hits the residents of the especially Srimati Radharani, she'll be walking and she'll smell the fragrance of Krishna, and then she'll immediately go to that place. How exalted, inconceivable. And yet, he's a boy, and yet he is born from mother Devaki. How is the unborn taken his birth? Inconceivable. He is the oldest, yet he was born. He is inconceivable. He is beyond all material conception. And who is always a person. He has a chintya rup. His form, that form again, is inconceivable. And he is luminous like the sun. There are descriptions that describe the luster of Krishna's transcendental form that are astounding. It's so sweet, simple and sweet. That boy who is looking like, he's looking like a flash of lightning. or with the luster of a blue sapphire. So he is luminous like the sun. And as Krishna's transcendental body is luminous, Krishna's knowledge about Krishna is also luminous. That means Krishna Surya Sam Mayahaya Andhakar. Andhakar means darkness. So when the, just as when the sun is there, there is no question of darkness being there simultaneously. So when we add knowledge about Krishna to our consciousness, therefore there is no question of the darkness of ignorance making our consciousness polluted any longer. So we should always be adding Krishna, Krishna, Krishna to illuminate our consciousness. Always be hearing about Krishna. This is the easiest process of adding light to our consciousness. Illuminating knowledge about Krishna, light. Just always be hearing about Krishna. And then when we're not hearing about Krishna, we should be chanting about Krishna. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. And then, when we're always hearing about Krishna or chanting about Krishna, then remembering Krishna becomes very easy. It becomes, practically speaking, automatic. But the beginning and most important process is hearing about Krishna. We can understand about Krishna by hearing. And Prabhupada once told me that if you do not hear, then your kirtanam, or preaching even, will be nonsense. What kind of kirtanam will you do if you don't have shravanam, if you don't have hearing? So he is transcendental. He is luminous like the sun. He is like the sun rays are all-pervading. So similarly, Krishna is all-pervading and unlimited. And he is transcendental. That means although he has a form, he has a transcendental form, although he is beyond the modes of material nature, though he appears to be in the material world, he has nothing to do with the material world and its three modes of material nature. So he is beyond, completely beyond this material nature. The modes of passion, goodness, material goodness, and ignorance have nothing to do with Krishna whatsoever. Nothing whatsoever to do with him. Is beyond the material nature. There is no, what is the symptoms of something in the material nature? The mode of goodness causes maintenance, the mode of passion causes creation, and the mode of ignorance causes destruction. Simply eternal existence for Krishna. There is no creation, there is no destruction. So because Krishna here is recommending this type of meditation, that we can, because he's recommending this type of focused meditation on him, he's now going to explain, and ultimately the question that Krishna was answering is how could he be known at the time of death? So this is how, and he's going to explain how to fix the mind in this way by the process of yoga. Fix one's mind on Krishna in this way through the process of yoga. So one who at the time of death, this is the next few verses, fixes his life air between the eyebrows, and by the strength of yoga, with an undeviating mind, engages himself in remembering the Supreme Lord in full devotion, will certainly attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is yoga Misra Bhakti. Because there is Bhakti, there is remembrance of Krishna, that is Bhakti, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. But there is yoga mixed in. So Misra means mixed. So this is yoga Misra Bhakti. So one, at the time of death, should focus his mind, if one is practicing this yoga Misra Bhakti, one should focus his mind through the process of yoga on Krishna. And he should fix his mind over here. This is the fifth of the six chakras. The sixth one is the Brahmaranja. This is Agya Chakra. This is Vishuddha chakra, and then there's Mool chakra, and then chest, I think, and then over here, one, two, and then three, and the heart, four, you know, four, five, six. Each one of these corresponds to different regions. They each promote a different consciousness. The top one, or Brahmarandra, is the Brahma consciousness, which is exalted. Over here is Indraloka, Vishuddha. Now this is Agya. This, I don't know what Vishuddha is over here. But this Agya chakra is very, very sweet if one's consciousness is fixed here. And even sweeter than that, in a completely different realm, practically, is this Brahmarandram. This is like Brahmaloka. One gets the rarefied atmosphere of Brahmaloka, which is beyond, far beyond any material miseries. There is not a trace of anxiety, practically speaking, if one's consciousness is focused there. There are different ways in yoga to do this, through meditation, through breathing, through different mantras. One can move the life air up, 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 from here to here, and then up to here. And then when one's consciousness is fixed in that way, through yoga, one can focus his consciousness on Krishna. And then, if one does that with an undeviating mind, he engages himself in remembering Krishna in full devotion, he will attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this, in this yoga process, is the process of bringing up the life air. So what else to do aside from bringing up the life air? This is explained in the next three verses. Persons who are learned in the Vedas, so when one's practicing yoga, one has to elevate the life air to these very exalted platforms. Persons who are learned in the Vedas, who utter Omkar, and who are great sages in the renounced order, enter into Brahman. So depending upon what one's desire is, at the time of death, and if one is thinking of these transcendental platforms, and as one is doing this very tricky, very, very subtle business, it's not easy to move the life airs. So if one is able to do this and concentrate his consciousness at the time of death, and he wishes to go to the Brahman platform, then he will actually enter into Brahman. Desiring such perfection, one practices celibacy. I shall now briefly explain to you this process by which one may attain salvation. So this is a very arduous and difficult process. Everything from the strict practice of celibacy to such a degree that you cannot think, contemplate, or have anything at any time, constantly. One has to be completely devoid at every second of any form of thinking about the opposite sex. This is true celibacy. This is true brahmacharya. So this is one of the prerequisites to be practicing this type of yoga, Misra Bhakti. But if one does it, one can attain perfection. The yogic situation is that of detachment from all sensual engagement. So this has already been explained in what chapter? How to do this through Ashtanga Yoga?
Six.
Yes. In chapter 6, the details of how to do this will briefly explain. That one detaches himself from sensual engagement. Prabhupada explains this in the purport as this pratyahara. This has been explained already, that the removal of the senses from the sense objects, the turning of the consciousness. Right now the consciousness goes outside, hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, touching. The consciousness through the senses is simply going outside, gaining information from out and bringing it inside. And then through the process of pratyahara, turning that process around, withdrawing the senses from the sense objects, turning it in and beginning meditation, and moving the life airs, etc. at that time. So the yogic situation is that of detachment from all sensual engagements, closing all the doors of the senses and fixing the mind on the heart and the life there at the top of the head. One establishes himself in yoga. So when one fixes his consciousness up here, or the life here, here, at the same time he meditates on Krishna in the heart, this is yoga. Very, 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 very subtle. Very, extremely difficult. How self-controlled and how focused this consciousness actually has to be. Focused of purpose, focused of consciousness. And then when one, ultimately what one does, he's thinking about Krishna in his heart, in the forearm form, Paramatma, and meditating simply on the beautiful Lord from his lotus feet to the top of his head with the crown on it, effulgent, beautiful, with club, disc, lotus flower, conch. And one simply meditates like this while the life air is fixed like this, and one's consciousness is fixed. I'm turned inside from the outside. This is the process. And that, this is in preparation for death. So one has to live his life constantly, practically, on this level, meditating all day, preparing for that moment of death, that auspicious time when he will die. So, thus, one establishes himself in yoga. This is actually samadhi. This is the more detail on the samadhi that's been described in the sixth chapter. And then what to do again, after being situated, this is text 13, in this yoga practice, and vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the supreme combination of letters, then, when all this has been completed and one's consciousness is thus focused, then what should one do? One should think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then, if he thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead while doing all these other things, pratyahara, pranayam, asana, nyam, nyam, focusing the consciousness, dharan, dhyan, etc., samadhi, and doing this incredible, rigorous training, living alone, complete celibacy, the seat not too high, not too low, in a very, very sacred place, eating just a little bit, but not too little, bathing, sleeping, just exactly proportionate, right, not talking to anyone. And then, if one thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mam Anusmaram, the Sanskrit is, if one thinks of me and quits his body, he will certainly reach the spiritual planets. So this is Yoga Nisra Bhakti. But we've already heard Yam Yam Vapi Smram Bhavan. So if you don't do anything, if you don't practice this very difficult Yam Yam Asan, Pranayam, Pratyahara, all these so difficult things which end in thinking of Krishna, if you just simply think of Krishna and don't do anything else, if you think of him constantly, you will attain the exact same goal. So why bother with any misra? Why mix the bhakti with yoga if the same goal is attained just by the process of always remembering Krishna? So therefore now in text 14, Krishna is going to explain, after he has just explained yoga misra bhakti, he will explain shuddha bhakti, or pure devotional service. This is a very important verse. Ananya cheta satatam. Ananya cheta means undeviated. So without allowing the mind to focus on anything else, not on what's for lunch, not what's for dinner, not on what the children are doing, not on what the grades are going to be on the exam, not what am I going to do next week, next year, where's the money going to come from, not on anything, not on anything, not on my country, not on my the pain in my left knee, not on anything. If one just simply ananya cheta, just focuses simply on Krishna, satatam, without a break. Now, someone may say that I can focus my mind on Krishna without a break, only on Krishna, without deviatingly, without a break, for about 1 second. I can do that. But then Krishna says, not only ananya cheta satatam, but yomam smarati, that this thinking about me has to be done nityasa, continuously, without a break, without deviation. This is Shuddha Bhakti. And there are two practices that one can learn to do this. One practice, because remember that the practice of sadhana, sadhana means practice, the practice of devotional service, the practices are meant just for this point, to always remember Krishna. So there are two ways described by Srila Rupa Goswami how we can go about always remembering Krishna. One is called Vaidhi and the other is called Raganuga. So in Vaidhi Bhakti, by following all the rules and regulations very carefully, Hari Bhakti Vilas, exhaustively by Srila Gopal Bhatta Goswami, and exhaustively tells how one can engage all day long in deity worship and this and that and regulate every aspect of his life. But the purpose of it all the rules and regulations, again, it's the same point, sava vidina chelacha, eitavya eva kinkara, only servant to this one of remembering Krishna. So one, now it's this time I do this and I put my tilak on like this and I make this yantra here and I cook in this way and I offer in this way. From early morning to late at the night, always engaged in serving the deity exactly according to the rules and regulations and always in this way by vidhi and nisheda, remembering Krishna. So that is the Vaidhi Bhakti. And then the second path is raga, the path of raga or attachment, where one is spontaneously attracted to Krishna and to remember his pastimes and form and qualities like that. When one's heart is spontaneously attracted to remember Krishna. So when one is spontaneously attracted, there is no question of a difficulty, of any difficulty in remembering. Now it's time to remember Krishna. Now I have to remember Krishna doing this. Now I have to do this. There's no have to. It's all spontaneous. The heart is attracted. So this platform is very glorious. It's extremely glorious. Like the rivers flow to the ocean, one's consciousness flows to remembering Krishna. So ananya cheta satatam yomam smarati nityasa tasyaham sulava partha. For one who is mastered in either way, one way or the other, for one who has mastered the always continuously, undeviatingly remembering Krishna, for him tasyaham sulava. Labha means obtain. And sulava means easy to obtain. For him, I become easy to obtain. Nitya yuktasi yogana, because he's constantly engaged in this yoga, this bhakti yoga or yoga practice. So as light, when it becomes focused and one pointed into a laser, becomes so powerful. So similarly, when the consciousness becomes ekeha, when it becomes like this, ananya cheta satatam yomam smarati nityasa, when one is focused in consciousness like this, then Krishna actually becomes easy to obtain. This is Shuddha Bhakti. This is pure devotional service. Ananya Bhakti. For one who always remembers me without deviation, I'm easy to obtain, O son of Pritha, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. Purport. This verse especially describes the final destination attained by the unalloyed devotees who serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Bhakti Yoga. Previous verses have mentioned four different kinds of devotees: the distressed, the inquisitive, those who seek material gain, and the speculative philosophers. Different processes of liberation have also been described: Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Hatha Yoga. But the principles of these yoga systems have some bhakti added. But this verse particularly mentions pure bhakti yoga without any mixture of jnana, karma, or hatha. As indicated by the word ananya cheta, in pure bhakti yoga, the devotee desires nothing but Krishna. A pure devotee does not desire promotion to heavenly planets. What mystery is that when the desire is there?
Karma mystery.
Karma mystery, right. He does not desire to go to the heavenly planets. Nor does he seek oneness with the Brahmajyoti, or salvation or liberation from material entanglement. That's Jnana mystery. A pure devotee does not desire anything. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the pure devotee is called Nishkam, which means he has no desire for self-interest. Perfect peace belongs to him alone, not to them who strive for personal gain. Whereas a Jnani Yogi, Karma Yogi, or Hatha Yogi has his own selfish interest, a pure devotee has no desire other than to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakali Ashanta Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Atta Eva Shanta. So peace only comes to the devotee who desires nothing but Krishna's pleasure. Therefore, the Lord says that for anyone who is unflinchingly devoted to him, he is easy to obtain. And then on the next page, the special qualification of the pure devotee is that he is always thinking of Krishna without deviation and without considering time or place. There should be no impediments. He should be able to carry out his service anywhere and anytime. Some say that the devotee should remain in holy places like Vrindavan or some holy town where the Lord lived. But a pure devotee can live anywhere and create the atmosphere of Vrindavan by his devotional service. It was Sri Advaita who told Lord Chaitanya, "Wherever you are, O Lord, there is Vrindavan." So when a pure devotee travels, he carries Krishna with him, Radha and Krishna in his heart. And his heart is dham. So therefore he emanates Vrindavan wherever he is. This we have experience of. So what happens to such souls who are ananya cheta satatam yomam smriti nitya? So what happens to them? Krishna will explain that now. Mamu petya punar janma dukhalayam shashvatam. Napnuvanti mahatmana samsiddhim paramam gata. After attaining me, they attain tasyaham sulabha parta, they attain Krishna. After attaining Krishna, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries. Why? Because they have attained the highest perfection. So now Krishna is going to describe where the souls go who attain him. And then he's going to describe, contrast the material world to the spiritual world, so we get an idea of why we should go to the spiritual world. First of all, Krishna said, dukhalayam ashashvatam, means, dukha alayam means a place of misery. And ashashvata means temporary. So anything that is temporary is miserable. So because this world is temporary, it is miserable. We've made this point unlimited times. I'll not mention it again now. But when something is temporary, it must cause us anxiety. Because when we don't have it, if it's temporary, it means there's either we didn't have it before or we won't have it in the future. So if we didn't have it, if there's a time when we don't have it, that means that we're going to be in anxiety. And there's a time, if there's a time when we didn't have it in the past, and there's a time when we won't have it in the future, but we have it now, that will mean that it will cause us anxiety, because we're wondering, when in the future will I lose this wonderful thing? And if there's some misery that we don't have, we know we will catch it in the future. So it is dukkhalayam ashashvatam, this world. We should know this. As long as we think that we can make some place or situation in the material world where we can enjoy ourselves, then we are useless. Actually, we cannot make advancement. See?
Only.
It's temporary. Therefore,
whatever is not in the past and whatever is not in the future, that is temporary. This light is also temporary.
Yes, this light is temporary. Especially in the last 2 weeks, it is temporary. Because what happened was there's a big transformer somewhere between Mathura and Agra that has shown its temporary nature and it has exploded or something. So a Brahma Bhuvanaloka from the, so someone may think, okay, I don't have, this is a typical tendency that I'm not happy now. I admit that my situation now is dukkhalayam ashashvatam, but I have a plan. And when I just do this and this and this and this, then I will have a happy situation. So then thinking like that, if I can get a happy situation in this way, then I don't have to go to Krishna's abode and then I don't have to think about him at all. So therefore Krishna explains, sorry, that there is no place, not from the highest to the lowest, you can be happy. A Brahma, Bhuvana, Loka, Puna, Avatana, Arjuna. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery where repeated birth and death take place. So even if you don't mind the fan going on and going off, and you resign yourself to the temporary nature of all material facility, even if you accept that, still we will be kicked out by death. So because from the highest planet to the lowest planet, a Brahma Bhuvanaloka Puna Avatuna Arjuna, because from the highest planet to the lowest planet, death takes place and birth takes place repeatedly, again and again and again. Therefore all places within material existence are places of misery. And there's simply no avoiding this fact. And we should know for sure that although scientists may promise that in the future they will give us a heart transplant and a liver transplant and make an artificial kidney and an artificial head and an artificial brain and artificial hands and transplant someone's, I don't know, fingernails or whatever, and they will just remake us and make plastic noses and teeth and, you know, we'll just, every, as one part wears out, they'll just keep replacing it. We should know that this is a bluff. They cannot keep the human being or any living creature in the material world alive. It is impossible. Prabhupada called this, he had a special term for it, a post-dated blank check. Why? Because the scientists are promising. Yes, we will do this, we will do this, we will do this. I remember when I was a boy, amongst my parents' friends, one man who lived around the corner from us died of cancer in 1950 something or other. So they named, they made a memorial, a cancer research foundation, and they named it after him. And they were always collecting money and playing bingo and this and that, and they were always collecting money to solve cancer, the problem of cancer. But we should know they have not solved cancer, the problem of cancer. and they will not solve the problem of cancer. And even if they did solve the problem of cancer, a new disease would come along that they cannot solve, because it is impossible to make the material situation eternal. We have to become convinced of this. Dukalayam ashashvatam. Abrahma bhuvanaloka. There is no situation that can change this. So a post-dated blank check is when the scientists say, yes, 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 we will do it in the future. And that is like when you go and buy something from someone, or someone wants to buy something from you. Say you have a set of Prabhupada's books, and he says, I will pay you for it, but will you accept my check? And you say, yes, I will give, but I want to post-date it. So much in the future, and it is blank. I will give you a post-dated blank check. Now, what is the problem with a post-dated blank check? That it is useless, because you can cancel it. The person can cancel it any time in the future, and you will get nothing. So even though you have the check in the hand, the promise in the hand, you will end up with nothing. So Prabhupada said, even though you have, he said, instead of giving me a post-dated blank check, why don't you give me $5 at least? At least give me something. Even $5 is better than a post-dated blank check. So the promises, promises, promises that we will make you eternal. Okay, you will make everyone eternal. At least make one person eternal. Or you say you will create life. Okay, at least make one mosquito. One fly. Now, Krishna is creating too many flies. So we're not asking you to create too many, but at least one, so we can see something from you. We don't want post-dated blank check. So, so from the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery where repeated birth and death takes place. But one who attains to my abode, if we attain the lotus feet of Krishna and Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan, O son of Kunti, he, such a person, never, never takes birth again. Once we attain that, one more birth, one more death and one more birth, that should be our goal. We have a material body, it must die. It must die. It cannot be stopped. And because we are souls, we must again take another birth. So one more only. This is our desire. Let this body die one more time and let me take birth in the service of Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan. One more death. And such a person who takes his birth in Krishna's abode, he does not take his birth as miserable living entities in this world take their birth crying, but they take their birth as Krishna takes his birth, very happily. There is no problem with that type of a birth. Okay, are there any questions or comments? And we don't have class tomorrow, but in Saturday's class, we'll finish the chapter. Please be heard from.
A two-part question. First part is that you were talking about this Ananya Bhakti. Okay, in 14. Text 14. So it sounds impractical. Like you were saying, just think of Krishna, think about your bad knee, and you know the fact that you have to pay this bill and do that. So
impractical?
Yeah. Like for example, if I were just thinking of Krishna all the time, I wouldn't get my service done.
But if the reason why you have that service is because you can't think of Krishna all the time. Because this is Siddha, Shuddha Siddha Bhakti. So if you could do this, so many people would come and take shelter of you that we would have unlimited people to do that service. So we wouldn't have to worry. So don't think there's going to be a loss if you could actually fully focus your mind on Krishna and become an exalted, like someone said, the Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada was preaching against material society. So someone said to Prabhupada, but what will if everyone becomes Krishna conscious, what will happen to the factories?
Oh.
Prabhupada said, let the factories go to hell. Who cares what happens to the factories and everyone becomes Krishna conscious? So we hope you will attain this platform very soon. That's part A.
Yeah, part of the other part is the way you describe Vaidhi, it sounds as if we're neither Vaidhi Bhaktas nor Raghunuga Bhaktas, so, you know, in a preaching movement like ISKCON. The way you described it just a few minutes ago.
Oh, because it's
glass.
Oh yeah, but Prabhupada, because it's not actually practical for anyone to follow that, there is an adjustment. And in the preaching movement, you can always think about Krishna by always preaching. That is the glory of distributing books and always preaching and making life membership, that it gives you a full facility to always talk about Krishna and always thereby always think about Krishna.
So that adjustment falls naturally under the category of Vaidhi.
It was tending to, for sure. We didn't go more into the differences, but it's impelled. The basic difference is one is impelled by the externals and one is impelled by one's internal attraction.
So this, for our case, we're impelled by the orders of the spiritual master.
But raga, it means that we're attracted to a specific relationship with Krishna. It means raga nuga anuga means following the ragatmika brajavasis, the exalted Nitya Parikars, eternal associates of Krishna.
That verse that we always hear, never forget Krishna. Where is that from?
Vishnu Purana.
And you describe
it. Prabhupada uses it all the time. It's in Rohini Nandana Prabhu's first book.
Also, you were mentioning about how material comparisons of Krishna's attractive features.
They are limited.
I was wondering, how is it, we see devotees, they relish these descriptions that we hear about Krishna's neck.
Because it gives us an idea. For we need material comparisons because we're in the material world. And our consciousness is material. So to help us understand the unknown, we take the help of the known. But we shouldn't think, just like Prabhupada would say sometimes, that Krishna's complexion is blackish. But we shouldn't think it's blackish like in the material world. It's spiritually black. So what does spiritually black mean? We don't know what spiritually black means, but it gives us both sides of the conception. It's blackish, but it's not really like our conception of blackish. So we use the known, that's the purpose of an analogy, to use what we do know to help us understand what we don't know. To use what we can conceive of to understand what we can't conceive of. There is no other way to understand the inconceivable practically. Okay, thank you. So tomorrow is Radhastami, and we should all very seriously pray to Srimati Radharani Lalita Vichaka Shamasunda Krishna Balaram Gonantai Srila Prabhupada Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and the two cows that we get lots of mercy. Two cows, we didn't want to leave anyone out.
Die.